He especially comes to enjoy loving relationships with his devotees and to reveal to the world his love for his devotees. As Sri Ram appeared in the Treta Yuga, the loving relationships that we read of in Ramayana, even millions of years later, continue to melt our hearts and bring about an awakening of spiritual love. How Maharaj Guha of the Naishadha race, a dweller of the forest, considered an outcast and untouchable by common society, with such humility and care, served Sri Ram when he came to that foreign place of the jungle. Maharaj Guha, knowing that Ram was exiled to the forest, offered him his entire forest kingdom. And although Guha was the king of that jungle, he wanted to be the humble servant of Sri Ram, with his own hands making a bed of leaves for Ram and Sita, protecting him at night, fanning him with a fan of leaves. In this way, he showed his love, and Ram in return showed his infinite love toward Guha. And Bharat, who by the evil intentions of Kaikeyi achieved the kingdom of Ayodhya, he went to seek out Ram, telling him that it was his wish that he become the king of Ayodhya, and that Bharat live in the forest for 14 years to replace his exile. When Sri Ram refused, Bharat begged that he put his lotus feet and a set of wooden sandals. Bharat would never sit on the throne during those 14 years, but he enshrined the sandals of Ram as the king, and he led the life of an ascetic until Ram returned. And we read of Hanuman, who in the service of Ram would do and could do anything, lifting mountains, burning the most powerful city of Sri Lanka. The love between Hanuman and Ram is one of the most beautiful topics that has ever been discussed in creation. So the love between the Lord and his devotees is revealed when the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends to this world. And similarly, the love between the devotees and the devotees is a topic of great pleasure to hear. Srila Prabhupada was such a devotee who was so dearly loved by Lord Krishna. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutanaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Nama. And we surrender to his lotus feet. Because of the quality of his surrender, he has become so dear to Lord Krishna. And as Krishna's representative, those who became dear to Srila Prabhupada became most dear to Krishna. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. Therefore, it is one of the most purifying experiences which brings unlimited joy to our hearts when we hear of Srila Prabhupada's loving relationships with his devotees. of how he sacrificed his life for them and how they sacrificed their lives for him. This exchange of love is spiritual love. It is pure love. Tonight, we have the very wonderful fortune of being in the association of one of Srila Prabhupada's earliest and dearest devotees, Shamsundar Prabhu. When Srila Prabhupada was just beginning, Shamsundar was right there, constantly at his side. And many of the most historical and important parts of the foundation of this movement were established by the great surrender and devotion of Shamsundar Prabhu. In the 1960s, he began the worship of Jagannath. You know, when Srila Prabhupada was a little child, he would have the Ratha Yatra in Calcutta. It was his dream that Jagannath's Ratha Yatra be celebrated in a grand way all over the world. How dear that person must be to Srila Prabhupada, who was so instrumental in fulfilling that dream he had from his earliest childhood. He carved the first set of Jagannath deities directly and personally under Srila Prabhupada's direction, and also established and organized the first ISKCON Ratha Yatra. Jagannath Swami Ki. Of course, just last week we celebrated Ratha Yatra, so it is very timely that Shamsundar has come now, when it is so much alive in our hearts. Also, he established many temples. His preaching in London was unprecedented. Through him, wonderful Bhaktivedanta Manor was established. And the pleasure that he gave Srila Prabhupada was immense. And when he came to India by Srila Prabhupada's request, when Srila Prabhupada came to India, it was a very difficult field. And Srila Prabhupada wanted those people he trusted the most, who he knew would do anything for him, to come and help. And of course, he called upon Shamsundar and others, who established the preaching in Bombay, who actually was most instrumental in getting the land in Juhu. In fact, I could go on and on and on, but I think you'd rather hear from Shamsundar Prabhu. So I will end by saying, not only did he start the Pando program in Bombay, the first major preaching effort in Bombay as well as India, but he also arranged to take Srila Prabhupada and the deities of Radha and Krishna on procession to Chopati Beach, just 2-minute walk from here. And I think that by his Srila Prabhupada's divine grace and his hard work, Radha Krishna liked being in this Chopati neighborhood, so they came back in the form of Radha Gopinath. And we are very much indebted to you for giving us a nice home in Bombay. Let us once again welcome Shamsundar Prabhu. Please forgive me for not appropriately speaking of such a wonderful Vaishnav, so dear to my Guru Maharaj. But we humbly request, on behalf of all the devotees, that please share some of your remembrances of your pastimes with Srila Prabhupada.
You know, I practically have no qualifications to sit here and do this, but by your kind request, and Radhanath Maharaj, and by Krishna Chandra's request, how can I refuse? I simply pray that Prabhupada will give me the words to, so that you can understand what I'm trying to say. This is the first, yesterday only was the first time I have been back to Bombay in more than 20 years, nearly 25 years. So you must pardon me if I'm the emotions and the impressions that are overwhelming me at this point. I may not be able to speak very coherently. Three things have struck me the most since coming back. Only yesterday. It seems like weeks already. Number one, of course, we arrived only half hour before Mangala Arati at the Juhu Hare Krishna land. When last I saw Hare Krishna land, it was simply a malaria-infested swamp with palm trees, a few hardy devotees living in small shacks. And now, and the town of Bombay ended there. That was the end of the road. So now, just see what has happened. I sat down in the temple and could not believe what progress you all have made in such short time to create Prabhupada's dream. And to realize that the same devotees standing, or the same deities standing before me on the altar, were the very same that we struggled so hard to drag around India and to Bombay and various places, and now they found their final resting home in this most incredible temple that I have seen yet, Hare Krishna land. And then to sit in the restaurant, my goodness, it was like sitting in the finest restaurant in Paris or something. Prabhupada always dreamed of this, and none of us could see it. He would always say, someday we will have a first-class five-star hotel here. You'll see. Now I see. How could we ever have doubted? The second thing that has impressed me the most over this time that I am gone is this temple here in the heart of Bombay. Prabhupada always wanted a temple in the very heart of Bombay, and we struggled so hard to find one back in the old days. Even then, it was very, very difficult to find space here. Now I imagine, I've heard from Krishna Chandra, that it's almost impossible. And yet you've done it. You've created this beautiful, wonderful place for Prabhupada's work to attract devotees and support for Krishna movement in the very heart of Bombay. In fact, I remember once we went to some speaking engagement over here at the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, just behind, and Prabhupada said at the time in the car, you know, we should have our center right here, somewhere right here. Here it is. And the most amazing thing of all is to see so many wonderful Indian devotees from India. Now you are all back where you belong. In those days we had very big trouble attracting young people, old people, anyone from India to join our movement. Here we are. Prabhupada was giving the real Vedic culture back to India. No one would believe us. No one would follow. So we struggled on, a few Westerners, to try to build something according to Prabhupada's design. And now to see the result, is it's overwhelming for me to find such high men as Krishna Chandra. And all of the Indian devotees, doctors and lawyers and intelligent people, young people, adventurous people, devotees of Krishna, full-time, much, much, much better devotees than we ever were in those days. Maharaj and others have been trying to shower praise upon me for my efforts in those days. And I keep reminding them that is not the fact. We were simply young people with lots of energy who were only carrying on Prabhupada's instructions. We were like extensions of his energy, that's all. Members of an army, a small army. Maybe what you'd call an advance troop or something, a SWAT team. We were a SWAT team. Prabhupada was the general. And we took every direction from him. We just carried out his desires. So we cannot take any credit for any of this. But we did this because we were so fortunate. We did not have years of spiritual discipline behind us, like most of you have had, born in Vaishnava families, or at least in a civilization where Krishna and Radha and all of the things of Krishna consciousness are available to you since childhood. We had none of that. We didn't even have any books. Prabhupada had not yet put into print. Maybe Bhagavad Gita, perhaps, was done by then, but that was all. But we had Prabhupada. We had Prabhupada. We were able to see him and deal with him, if not every day, by mail, by personal correspondence, even by telephone. I can remember calling Prabhupada up someplace in the world. He would come to the phone, "Yes, Shamsundar?" And I'd give some report, asking him some question. He'd give me the answer, and, "Okay, thank you, Prabhupada. Good night." And that way he carried on the early stages of his movement. And we were simply his underlings, his hired hands, his employees almost. But he developed amongst us a certain kind of competitive spirit. You know, in the West we like to, because we're very capitalistic, we like to compete. Most of us were born of merchant families or families trying to get something, money out of the world by doing something better than somebody else. So he harnessed this spirit and made us compete against each other to outperform the others. And because we found that by outperforming somebody else, we could get more attention from Prabhupada. That was our reward. Just to sit with him while he smiled on some accomplishment that we had just made, no matter how small, was our reward. I've looked back through today, I had a little time to look back through the Lilamrita that Satsvarupa has compiled, because my memory is so fogged by Maya and I should say my immersion into the material world over the past 20 years. And I was reminded from the beginning how we first came, October 1970. I started reading some of the dates, October 1970, then November, December, February. And I started realizing how quickly all of this happened. All of this happened so fast. It seems like looking back that it took months and years for us to do any of these things, but things practically happened overnight in those days. We arrived in October 1970. We were just now, okay, first time. Now we see the real India. We were all flabbergasted. We had no idea this was India. This was something we had read a little bit about. We had seen some example in our spiritual master, but to be overwhelmed by the vast culture and tradition and agelessness of India was something we all first had to come to grips with. How to talk with people, how to move around the town, how to buy things. Prabhupada joined us then from Calcutta. We were living at Mr. Siksharia's house on Marine Drive. No one had ever eaten such good prasadam. Prabhupada sat there each day and guided our movements. At first we were very controversial. Oh, this was big news. The Prabhupada's dancing white elephants from the west. Here we were doing kirtan up and down the streets, giving programs, speaking in English. We seemed to know what we were talking about. I don't think we did really did know much yet, but we seemed to know what we were talking about. But Prabhupada began to get kind of an idea that perhaps this going out on Sankirtan and so on was perhaps wasting time, that we should begin more of an organizational move to establish centers throughout India. And then once we had bases, then we could preach properly instead of running here and there on Kirtan without any fixed address. So it seems like in this competitive spirit, Prabhupada more or less singled me out to be the I was hoping that he would single me out to be the president of the activities here, first activities in Bombay, because I'd heard so many horror stories about Delhi and Calcutta and some of these other cities, and I could understand Bombay is the nicest place. Oh, I hope he chooses me to stay here. And in fact, it worked out that way. He left me behind to try to find us some accommodations. We would worn out our welcome, literally, with the Siksharyas. We needed a place of our own. But he was invited, meanwhile, to go to some other places. I don't remember, Amritsar, Indore, places like that. So I stayed behind with a small group, and we looked for places to stay. We wound up in Chembur, which is about as far out in those days as you could get from downtown Bombay. From our earlier adventures in starting temples in other cities of the West, we always preferred to stay right in the heart of the city. I mean, that's where the action was, that's where the money was, that's where the communications were. And here we were stuck out in Chembur. But from there, each day we would travel by train into Bombay for our preaching work. Prabhupada had instituted this life member program. So at least we had something to do. Some books had arrived finally, so we had something to offer to prospective life members. And we thought, well, to make life members in such a city as Bombay, the commercial center, the capital really of India, we should go first to the biggest men, to the topmost families, to make life members. And of course it's not so difficult it is very difficult to enter into the chambers of someone like the Mafatlal family or one of the big families in Bombay, but we were somehow encouraged by this transcendental competition to see who could get the biggest and the most life members. So in our typical Western bungling ways, we used to charge into the offices, even if the secretary said, no, he is not here, no, you cannot come in. We would go anyway. We would force our way in the door and go like this and say, please become a life member of Hare Krishna. And I don't know most of the reason they became life members was to get rid of us. But even Krishna Chandra's father, I remember very well, Arvind, I made him a life member. I wish I could see him now. In this way, we gradually began to attract some money. I don't know, not much support came, but money came. But then a few men, like, I don't know if he's here, Mr. Chabria tonight, Dr. Bali and his wife, Ajantamali, Sadaji Witlal, the famous sweets dealer, big man, I understand he's gone now. They began to understand, well, these people do have a little grasp of our Vedic culture. And they met Prabhupada personally, so they knew that this was something genuine. And they began to give us their support not just financial, but for instance, Sadaji Wadlal gave me a 1952 Chevrolet car to drive. And in those days, I didn't want a driver. I drove it myself all over Bombay to make life members, to try to find a house for us. One day I remember, we're still trying to get used to India, all this, during all this period. I remember driving down through this very crowded market over here, Kalbadevi Bazaar, very tiny streets, driving through with this big American car. And I was going fairly slow, but suddenly an old man jumped in front of the car and I hit him. Boom! And he flew over to the sidewalk, laying like this, and I had heard all these stories. If you hit somebody in India with a car, or especially if you hit a cow, and I just closed my eyes and I thought, here come the bricks, here come the rocks, they're gonna turn over the car. Finally, I opened my eyes, and the people on the street, they were beating the old man with a stick. They said, Sadhu, 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 you can't jump in the car in front of the sadhu's car. So we bungled our way through one incident after another. Prabhupada, meanwhile, was organizing. This is what's so amazing. Besides organizing the Bombay Yatra, he was busy organizing Delhi, Mayapur, Calcutta, Vrindavan, all of these other centers simultaneously. His first love, though, in those days was Bombay. Always Bombay, always Bombay. He kept, even if he was in some other place, he would call or write, how are things going in Bombay? Have you got a house yet for me? We were unsuccessful in getting a house for a long time, so Prabhupada came back. And then I look on my dates and it says beginning of February. I mean, this is only 3 months. In 3 months, all this happened. He comes back, and this is after Surat and Allahabad as well, the Kumbh Mela. In only 3 months, he did all this stuff. And he came back in February, beginning of February. By then, we had found the skyscraper in Akashganga. And we had to wait for them to finish it. It was not even completed yet. There was such a shortage of housing in Bombay that we had to wait until the building was finished. But I remember we moved in before they even finished. The windows were not even mounted. Mr. Chavriya, ki jai. Mr. Chavriya kindly put us up in his Sea Palace Hotel for many months while we roamed the streets of Bombay. He's a great soul. Anyway, Prabhupada came back from Allahabad. Hare Krishna Ramchand. This is 25 years. We're still in these bodies. By the grace of Krishna. Anyway, going back to that 1st of February, 19, I guess it's 71 now, by 71, new temple, and Prabhupada announced that he wanted to put on a pandal show in the middle of March, third week in March. We selected the date. So 7 weeks. Looking back at these timetables, I can hardly believe this was all done in 7 weeks. We had to ready the temple, install furniture, windows, everything, rugs, lamps, light, telephone, everything in a short time, plus put on what we hope to be the largest Pandal ever in the history of Cross Maidan. Of course, this transcendental competition helped because I would force, for instance, I was in charge of publicity, so I would rent the whole side of a building, this is American style advertising, and have them paint Hare Krishna and get a price afterwards, and say, and it would be some huge price. Then I would say to Giriraj, who had to collect the money, "Well, Giriraj, you've got to come up with a couple of lakhs here." So he would have to fight to get the money. And we built, as far as I know, the first balloon, helium balloon, for advertising. We put it above Cross Maidan with flashing lights coming down that said, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna," back and forth. And we put it up in the air up over the Cross Maidan for a week or two in advance of the pandal, so everyone would come. We covered the entire of Bombay with posters and billboards and hoardings. "Prabhupada is here. Please come and see him speak." Well, finally it happened, and the rest is history. Don't know how much to dwell on the old history. It's all in the Lilamrita. Well, I'm on my own now. My notes are finished. At some point November 1971, this Mr. Nair offered this land for us in Juhu. At that time, most of us who were intimately involved in Bombay were a little bit against this idea. To move our center of activities so far away seemed that it would hinder our preaching work. Our real idea was to preach in Bombay, downtown Bombay, and try to attract some support and some Indian devotees. And to be situated so far away would be a great inconvenience for us. But Prabhupada insisted, and just see his foresight. Now I see from Juhu north, there's another Bombay. Juhu's only halfway through Bombay now. Unbelievable. But you all probably know some of the litigation and all that took place with the Nair family over this land. Practically none of us thought it was worth it because it was just a piece of swamp with some palm trees on it under such great, so many difficulties involved with trying to do something there. The neighbors were against us. It was undeveloped. There was no sewage. There was no water. There was nothing. Prabhupada insisted. In fact, he stayed in the area. He moved out there, at first in one man's house, later in a house on the premises, and guided the activities of the temple build construction, and in my instance, the litigation. He appointed me to be his surrogate lawyer. I had to go every day to the courts to fight against the Nair family over this land. So I would come home at night exhausted from not only from the traveling, but having to fight in the courts. This is totally new to me. I was simply a student of philosophy. I wasn't a lawyer. But Prabhupada would take every point. He would make me take complete notes of all the happenings during the day, and then he would stay up. If it took all night, he would answer point by point. "Now, Shyamasundar, you go back tomorrow." Sometimes Tamal Krishna was with me also. "And you say this when he says that. And then you present this brief and this thing." So this went on for months and months and months in the British style court with the guy with the wig and the black robes, the judge. It was all very transcendental to fight for Krishna under such conditions. Gradually we became accustomed to living here and being here. And in fact, after some time, I didn't want to leave Bombay. I loved it here. I was the president, and I was having the best time of my life, going around with the other devotees, making life members, meeting with, scheming with Mr. Chabria and Dr. Bali and other life members who became very attached to us. How should we do this? How should we do that? Making plans, because Prabhupada was not always here. When he was gone, these men were our mentors, our counselors. Prabhupada one day said to me, "You know, Shyamasundara, I would really like to go to Russia. I've been trying now for 2 years to get a visa. No one will give me a visa. Can you get me a visa?" So I said, "I would try." I went down to the Russian consulate here in Bombay, and one day they gave us a visa. 5 days, you can go. So he said, "Shyamasundara, you will go with me." So I left, at that time I left Bombay as the president of the center here and became Prabhupada's secretary for the next, I don't remember, 2 years, 2.5 years. But each time he would come, so I traveled with him from then on. And each time he would come back through Bombay, we would sit and go to the court some more, fight over Juhu some more. Prabhupada gradually developed this Hare Krishna land under great difficulties. Probably, if I had time, I could remember hundreds of incidents. My mind is not very, very focused on the individual things that happened. I remember more the overall schemes that he had. And Bombay was his favorite, the place he wanted the centers to thrive the most. He said, "If we capture Bombay, we capture India." And practically that's happened. 20 years. I think it might be fruitful if anyone had any questions or any points they want to ask me about those times or anything. I'm not a very good preacher anymore. I cannot give you any spiritual advice or any spiritual words. But maybe I can answer some questions or historical points if anyone has any. Yes. Yes. We left from here, from Bombay to Moscow, and on Air India. And during the flight, I remember the pilot himself came back and requested Prabhupada to come up to the front of the plane and see the interior of the Boeing 747 jet plane. And Prabhupada was amazed at all of the dials and switches, and he asked many questions. What is this? What did he do? And then when we arrived in Moscow, you know, we had no place except the Intourist, it was called, the official government, Russian government agency for tourism. Don't forget, this was the height of the Cold War, the big Cold War between America and Russia, 1971, the very middle of it, heart of it. Yet Prabhupada had the courage to step into this situation. And they put us up, made us stay in this hotel, National Hotel. And we saw the hotel, and they said, and you started to give us coupons, and then you will eat in this restaurant. We said, no, we cannot do that. Would you kindly allow us to cook our own food? And after some time, they agreed to give us the servant's kitchen to use to cook for our cooking. I'll never forget one scene. Prabhupada's servant, Aravinda, he was with us. He was doing the cooking, and he would go in the servant's kitchen and cook. I would do the shopping. I mean, it was a full time job in Moscow just to cook and shop. And I was coming back from a full day of shopping. Probably I had 3 or 4 items after shopping all day. Walking down the hallway and seeing Aravinda run out of the kitchen and pots and pans flying after him. And then this big woman coming back out of behind him, yelling at him in Russian. Apparently he had used some of her sugar in one of Prabhupada's preparations. And sugar was very dear to the Russians in those days. So Prabhupada, he had no program, except it was June and the light was shining, the sun was shining most of the time, only a few hours of darkness. So we would go for very early walks, like 4 in the morning, the sun was shining. Prabhupada would say, "Let's go for a walk." He had a small room. He said, "I don't like sitting in this room. At least let us see the town." So we would walk around Red Square and some of those places. And just before leaving, I remembered I had no camera. So I went down across from VT station there and bought some small, very cheap Indian-made camera and one roll. I could only find one roll of film with 12 shots, and it was black and white. So with those 12 pictures, those became 12 famous pictures that I took on those morning walks around. You must remember, in those days we had no support. We had no cameras, we had no film. And the tape recorder that they sent me or gave me from the United States, it was always misfunctioning. Despite all my requests for tape, no one would send me any tape. You couldn't buy in India in those days tapes. The times were very different. There was no support. We had to make do with what we could find. At any rate, finally Prabhupada said one day, he said, "What can we do here?" And I said, "Well, we can go on a guided tour." He says, "All right, let's go on the guided tour." So we got on the bus. We were going to see the famous sights of Moscow. So they showed us the Kremlin. They showed us all of these army and Lenin this and Marx that. And finally out to the university, which was just a plain cement slab concrete structure. Prabhupada said, "Shamasundar, can we leave? Can we get out of here?" He didn't want to finish the tour. So somehow or other I was able to find a taxi and we left the tour about halfway through. But he stood out on the balcony at the, what, I don't know whether they called it Stalin University or something in those days, Marx University. Huge place. And he stared out over, you could see all over Moscow. And he said, "One day, everyone will be chanting Hare Krishna." How could we even imagine? And then one of the mornings, I went out to look. I heard there was a rumor. And mind you, this is the height of the growing season. Fruit and vegetables should be plentiful everywhere. But they were not there. We couldn't find anything to eat. I heard there was a rumor that there were some cherries, fruit, small red fruit that grows in the north, in one market across Moscow, some cherries available. So I walked over there. And on the way there, suddenly a half a dozen men wearing normal dress but with red armbands, they came and grabbed me and threw me against the wall and started... And the only word I finally understood, "Document, document." Ah, I said, oh, "Document, hotel, hotel, document." Ah, then they backed off. I came to understand later that these were volunteer police. After their job in their office or their factories, they would volunteer to walk through the streets of Moscow looking for deviation, looking for anything that was not normal. Can you imagine living in such a society? And Prabhupada observed these things and he said, "This cannot last. A state that is ruled by fear will never last." So when I got close to the hotel, these two boys came over to me. One was an Indian boy. One was Russian. First question was, "Can you change some money?" "No, I have no money to change." "Ah, have you got any American jeans?" pants. No, I don't have any American pants. But I have a spiritual master. I was addressing the Indian boy because he knew at least what is a spiritual master. He told me his father was the ambassador from India to Russia. I said, yes, let's go. So Prabhupada finally got to see somebody. Besides our ugly faces, he got to see some new people. And he poured energy into these two boys for 2 days. He wouldn't let them go. He explained the entire Krishna conscious philosophy to those two boys in 2 days. And this Russian boy was so intelligent that he understood it all in 2 days. And the only book they allowed through customs for me was one, my personal copy of Bhagavad Gita, my old copy. And from that book, and from those few hours speaking with that boy, now there, I saw in Vrindavan last week, just a few of thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of very nice Vaishnava, Russian Vaishnava devotees. It's unbelievable how the potency of Krishna consciousness came from that small incident. Even we went to talk with this Professor Katosky, which was our official reason for being there. And I think that was, I taped that, and it's become published, people have read it. But he ultimately, even now, apparently now has come back to the devotees and said that Prabhupada's philosophy was far superior to his Marxism. Anyway, that's Russia. That's the story of Russia. Any other questions or points?
In 1971, Prabhupada started this life membership program,
yes.
I believe in Mr. Sekseria's house.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
And then he started in that Nepenthe Road, he was going to Bridgeratan Mota's house. Remember Mr. Bridgeratan Mota?
The exact names I don't remember, but I remember a program on Nepenthe Road at night with lights and everything.
Yes.
Yes.
Were you in a group which came to our house in 71, with Prabhupada in the afternoon? This was in a small bungalow in the Nepenthe Road. Because I remember Malti Mataji was there. She told me.
Malti.
Malti Mataji.
Yes. I was probably there also.
It's hard for me to recall specifically.
But were you shaven?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
In those days, they all shaved.
Okay.
But sometimes Prabhupada, we had so many things to do that we would, our energies or our we would all be spread out in various directions doing different things. So I don't remember all the exact programs and so on that Prabhupada put on in those days, but I definitely remember that Nepenthe Road program. And always he was canvassing you older Indian gentlemen, please help us. Please.
Because he had asked, Prabhupada had asked my father to adopt Jayaprakash Swami and make him an Indian citizen. He was a shock to our family. And then he did. My father did. Yeah, and he has become, a citizen. So that was a very unique thing, because my father was a member of parliament, and Prabhupada said, what is this nonsense CIA allegation they're making against us?
Yes.
Were you at that time?
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes, I remember now.
Okay.
That was the time of great tension with Pakistan, and
that's right.
People were accusing us of being CIA agents. I don't know if that film Dom Otto Dom had come out yet, but after that, they were all a bunch of hippies smoking chillums.
It was very difficult to attract intelligent people, but especially young devotees. There was one or two Indian devotees came, but we could tell after some few days they were only there for some economic gain, some false purpose for being with us. So practically, we did not attract sincere Indian devotees for several months. Finally, I remember Lokanath came, Mahamsa, a few devotees like that came. Mostly, though, it was programs in your father's house, places like that, where we went. And on the morning walks, Prabhupada would try to appear in places where the big gentlemen of Bombay would walk, like on Malabar Hill or along the seafront here in Marine Drive. And everyone would go like this, pranam, but nobody would help. Very few people would help. Now, seeing how you're all helping, I'm overwhelmed. London Temple?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a whole night. Yeah, but I'm not used to sitting cross-legged. I'll have to sit on the... Well, London, in those days, 1960s, middle 60s, London was becoming a center for young people, new things, young ideas, fresh ideas, changing the entire social and cultural fabric of the West. And we very much thought that would be a good place for Krishna consciousness. Plus, it was Prabhupada's guru, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's dream to have a center in London. So somehow or other I got some money, a little money, not much, $1,000 or something. And we went to Prabhupada, Gurudas and Mukunda and myself, and asked him if we could go to London. He said, yes, by all means. So we made a plan. In those days you had to have a certain amount of money in your bank account to come into England, even as a tourist. So we only had enough money for one person to come in at a time. So I went in first, then I put my money in the bank, and then the others all waited in Amsterdam. We got some very cheap plane tickets, Icelandic Airways, you were mentioning Icelandic, that's how we got there. And one by one, then we would transfer the money to Amsterdam, and they would come into England, then they would transfer it to the next one. We all got in finally. But we had no fixed residence. We didn't know anybody in London. But there again, it was the Indian community that helped us from the beginning. We began to meet sincere Indian gentlemen, and they invited us to live in their homes. And from there, we gave programs and gradually expanded. But it was very slow and harsh conditions. It's always cold in that place. I was so happy when Prabhupada said, come to India. I hadn't been warm in 3 years. But a long struggle, finally, you know the outcome we have now, such a vast movement there, just like India. Things have become... All of Prabhupada's dreams, he knew he didn't have much time. Imagine 69 years old when he first came to the United States, wandering alone down... I can just imagine him wandering through those terrible neighborhoods in New York City with no money, no friends, only he had some books in a box. Even the few things he had, like a tape recorder, any other thing, a watch or anything at all valuable, were stolen from him by the thieves. Mukunda, my old friend from school, that we went to school together, was the first to meet, one of the first to meet Prabhupada. And he was attracted to him so much that he drove out to the West Coast where I lived, and he said, Sam, I've found this Swami, you must meet him. And I said, no, I don't see how one man could be so important. But after watching Mukunda for several months, now I had known him for many years, and watching Mukunda for several months,
And I never saw him unhappy. I never saw him. He was always peaceful. He was never complaining, never criticizing. No meat. He didn't eat any meat. He didn't take any drugs or intoxicants. He had a girlfriend, but that's not bad. And then I know, you know, he was always happy, following these principles, and always talking about this Swami. We had no books. He couldn't show me any books. So I decided, well, if my friend Mukunda is happy all the time, I want to do it also. I don't care how he did it. I want to be that way. So I became attached to Prabhupada, even before meeting him through Mukunda Maharaj. And practically Mukunda has saved my life, not only from that first introduction, but over the years he has kept in contact with me. Wherever I am, I'm in a business which takes me to many remote places, and I've lived in jungles and wilderness for most of the past 20 years. Mukunda always finds me there. Somebody will hand me a letter that they'd walked 100 miles through the jungle that Mukunda wrote and hand to me. There's Krishna again. So now I'm getting old. And I have to think what blessing I have been given by Prabhupada to have. And all of my material activities now are shedding away. Krishna has stolen everything away from me again. And I have no wife. My children are grown. My business is nearly finished. I want to come back to Krishna. This is where it all is. The only truth. Krishna consciousness. The practical results are here, right before me. There's no question. The evidence is what more evidence do you need? And Mukunda has gone on now for 30 years practicing Krishna consciousness. He is practically a saint in my eyes. And I knew him when he was a little boy. We are here to celebrate Prabhupada because he has given us all of this, everything. He's with us now. There's no question. Prabhupada is watching everything we do. He told us once. He said, even after I go, I have to take care of all of you guys. I'm responsible. I took you on. I can't get out of it. But he said, even if I have to come back birth after birth to be your servants, I will still be here. Yes. The Cross Maidan program? Yes? Yes, when I saw him yesterday, I recognized him immediately. But I told him we weren't attracted to him especially, but we needed more manpower, so very, very selfishly we grabbed him. He was saying, Gurudas was so kind to him here, Tushta Krishna was so kind to him there, this. We were very kind to you because we wanted your help. No, that's not the entire truth. Some people manifest devotional aptitude in their faces, and so you were so obviously a candidate for Krishna consciousness that you stood out above all the rest, to the point where Prabhupada even personally recognized it and requested you please to come up and join him on the stage. Even with without your hair now, I recognized you immediately. Some devotees I see after 25 years, I can't even recognize them. They change, their faces change, you know, but your face hasn't changed at all. You look still look the same age practically. Krishna Chandra, what a miracle that he has come to Krishna consciousness. He was telling me his story, how he had no idea to do this kind of thing. Somehow Krishna has tricked him also. Krishna is a great trickster. The thing about Krishna consciousness I like so much is not only, well, two things attract me. Everyone is different, but the two things I like about Krishna consciousness the most are the unlimited adventurism of it. Every day is a new adventure, and it's unlimited what you can do for Krishna. You can do anything for Krishna to spread his name. And you can do any kind of wild adventure that you feel like doing. This you can't do under normal business. But Krishna consciousness, you can do anything. You can go to the South Pole if you want, start a temple, or figure out some way to spread Krishna consciousness uniquely, and go for it. That's the adventure, the part I like about Krishna consciousness. The other part is the humor, the ongoing comedy of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is such on its face is such an absurd movement. It's so comical and so funny that people like us are dressed in these kind of clothes, dancing around, singing and chanting and looking at deities and gathering together like this. That in itself is quite funny, but the things that you do in Krishna consciousness, you should always keep the humor, always keep it light. It's knowing that Krishna is the greatest comedian. I think he even says in something in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Even of gamblers, of cheaters, I am the of gamblers, I am the cheats, and so on. Of comedians, he is the funniest. That's for sure. He is pure comedy. In these remembrances of things like London or Russia or early days in Bombay, I remember more the funny moments than any serious. I know we struggled and it was severely hard on our bodies and minds, but those parts I don't remember. I remember the fun things, the funny things. I think Krishna consciousness should always be humorous. Everyone should be laughing all the time.
Were you with Prabhupada when Prabhupada got London Ishwar, the deities in London Ishwar?
I wasn't physically at the place where he got them, but I remember that. I was busy building the temple. That was another one of these. Prabhupada was always laying these huge responsibilities on us, time-wise, that didn't seem possible to be performed. One of them was, we must install deities by... And there was like 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now. Where are we going to find deities, first of all? Secondly, the temple wasn't ready. The temple wasn't built. So I was probably busy building the temple day and night. But I remember Mukunda and Tamal Krishna and Prabhupada went out to see some man who had some deities from one of the Indian groups there. And they were not able to worship them somehow, and so Prabhupada grabbed them. Yes, we'll take them. So suddenly we had deities, and somehow or other the temple got completed on the date it was supposed to. Now he's pouring it on you Indian devotees here, especially in Delhi and Bangalore, those places. You've already announced opening dates November for those huge buildings to be finished. Everybody's got to hustle. I don't know what how Bombay and the other temples interplay, but I assume that Bombay is one of the financing centers for the
the other programs in India. I don't know. This is where 60% of the money in India is in this city. Krishna Chandra was telling us last night. 60% of the taxes are paid by the people of Bombay, or the whole country. This is a very important place. What we saw of the guest house and the restaurant and the temple in Juhu are just magnificent, wonderful. But they have to be. Prabhupada said they have to be because this is the place where they expect that kind of thing.
Hare Krishna. Could you tell us how this philosophy book project developed between yourself and Srila Prabhupada?
That actually started here in Bombay. We were sitting in Akashganga. And I don't remember the exact circumstances, but one morning Prabhupada and I got into a philosophical discussion, and I based my replies on some Western philosophy because I majored in that subject in university. And he said, you know, we should write a book. He said, I want you to come every morning and you present your view as a Western philosopher and I will counter. So in one of the bookstores here in town, I found a synopsis or an outline of all the Western philosophers, a few pages of each one, their essential philosophies. And so each morning we did a different philosopher. Some of the major ones like Darwin and those rascals, sometimes we would spend a week on those guys. And I know Satsvarupa said that many of those tapes were lost, but they were not lost. They were not lost. They're turning up now. I left them all in Los Angeles, and I think they've rediscovered some of the lost ones and so on. They had to redo some of them with Hayagriva because they couldn't find the originals, but they've been found. But this carried on for a year or more, these discussions, wherever we were, Moscow or Paris or New York or Los Angeles, any place. It was a regular routine that I would come in the morning after his massage or breakfast and become a philosopher, and he would answer and counter, and he defeated every argument, and no question. And it was really good for me because questions would come up in my mind that I realized I didn't really, I wasn't fully convinced either about this point. And Prabhupada would convince me. Have you read the book? Did you read the book? You're a philosopher? The nice thing is it's not so difficult to understand, even for laymen, for ordinary people. Prabhupada's arguments are so crystal clear. Most Western philosophers are mental speculators. They have to use big, big words to fool you. Prabhupada cut right through with simple, simple replies. Did you have another question, Krishna Chandra? Same question.
Shyam Sundar Prabhu Ki. Now for the pleasure of Shyam Sundar Prabhu and Sri Radha Gopinath Ji. Let us have a wonderful kirtan for the arti of Sitaram and this holy occasion of Ram Navami. We can start arti. We'll do our traditional kirtan as Prabhupada taught, like this. You can teach Radha Gopinathji Hindi. Let us offer our gratitude to Shyam Sundar Prabhu. by loudly saying Hari Bol. Shamsundar Prabhu, very wonderful experience you have bestowed upon us tonight. Thank you very much.